out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 20th of September, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're almost up to the autumnal equinox. One more day to go. We have got with us today Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, how are you doing today?
I've been better, Sven. I want to apologize for my friends who didn't get an episode of the Orthodox Nationalist this week. I was in the hospital. I have a herniated disc. They call it a slip disc. I must have been, I felt like I was a million dollars burning up. It's all stress, the guy said. It's all, you know, I said, well, you know, if you were in this movement, you'd be stressed out too. But that's really all it is. And he said, it's going to kill me soon. So, well, let's get me while you have me.
Well, let's hope you can just hang on in there a little bit longer, or at least long enough for this podcast. I mean, it is hard to do stuff if you're in pain. I can quite understand you missing an episode. It's not like it's a regular thing that you miss an episode like that. And I'm sure, you know, we'll just look forward even more to next week's one. But we've got some good content today that you've sent me, some particularly interesting stuff that we've got here to do with the Russian economy, and not just the Russian economy, but also the Turkish economy and the Chinese economy, and why all of this is happening. And we'll start with having a look at what's been happening between Moscow and Beijing. Trade between Moscow and Beijing has grown each month in 2018. The trend has continued amidst growing trade tensions between China and the United States. Through July, Russia and China traded goods worth $58.35 billion, which is more than a 25% increase in annual terms, according to Chinese customs data. The volume of exports from China to Russia for this period increased by 16.6% to $26.9 billion. China bought $31.45 billion worth of Russian goods, representing growth of 34.9%. Both countries expect that trade will exceed the $100 billion mark this year. In 2017, bilateral trade amounted to $84.1 billion, so they're up by 19% from the year before, and Russia and China have set a goal to increase bilateral trade to $200 billion annually. That's massive amounts of trade that they're doing between one another, and yet Russia is supposed to be, nobody's supposed to be trading with Russia, aren't they? I thought America had said, Russia is persona non grata. No, nobody can do anything with Russia anymore. Well, China has ignored that, and they're making masses of money between them. Why aren't we hearing about this, Matt? Why aren't the Americans hearing about what's happening between the trade between Moscow and Beijing?
Well, they've always been very close partners, especially over the last 15 years or so. But this is because of the sanctions that were put on Russia by the U.S. and the trade war that the administration has declared on China on the other side of the world. Sanctions on Iran, which is a big trading partner of both and a huge economy, I think the 18th largest economy in the world. And so they have no choice but to trade with each other. But that just means that there is greater and greater ties. China's trade surplus with the U.S. actually went up since the tariffs have been put on. Russia has nationalized its banks. It just issued a Eurobond to raise money, and the demand is so high that they can increase the interest all they want. or decrease it for all they want, and the demand will still be there. American investors are blowing away. They're ignoring the sanctions all over the place because they love how the economy is being run in Russia. They could trust. They have the strictest anti-corruption laws in the world. And even things like data, you know, if you collect data on people, Russian citizens, it has to be kept within Russian borders. You can't collect data on Russian citizens and have it leave the country. This is one of the reasons that LinkedIn is not permitted in Russia, because they won't listen to that. This is the environment that's been created here. And, you know, you have American firms who will give lip service to the sanctions on the one hand and go in and invest anywhere under a shell company or whatever they have to do, figuring that the U.S. doesn't have the stomach for a long court case. And then you have India, which has just opened up its huge natural gas purchase pipelines with Russia as well. You know, the Eurasian world is exploding. And because of this, national currencies are increasingly coming into use. The dollar is not really relevant in these cases anymore. Russia has dumped 90% of its dollars. There's a huge crash coming for the dollar, which has already lost 90% of its value over the last 80 years. And what greater thing could you possibly do for nationalism in the world than create an environment where national currencies can finally be used again? No one has done any more for nationalism than Putin has. And this connection with China, it guarantees the resurgence of nationalism all over the world.
Well, sanctions just force countries to be self-sufficient. The same as if you have to tighten your belt and you can't afford to spend so much money, then you're going to get out there in the garden, you're going to start growing your own vegetables, you're not going to be going out buying meals at the restaurant, you're going to be cooking them yourself, you're going to be doing it all yourself. And that is nationalism, isn't it? It's being self-sufficient. The individual should be self-sufficient and the country should be self-sufficient. So these sanctions seem to be having the opposite effect. I didn't realize China was under sanction as well. So both Russia and China said, well, so what? We'll just trade with each other then. And they're making masses from this. The recent growth in the Russian currency has helped the ruble traded MOEX index reach an all-time high on Tuesday. The index rose to 2,390 points for the first time in its history after the ruble strengthened to 67.7 against the dollar and 79.1 against the euro. Earlier in September, the Russian currency had suffered a deep plunge against reserve currencies amidst a new US sanctions threat. Moscow Exchange's dollar-dominated RTS index also rose on Tuesday. It reached 1,111 points for the first time since August. The MOEX index surpassed a historical high due to the strengthening of the ruble, which led to a rise in the price of ruble shares of Mekel, Rusal, Alrosa, AFK Cisterna, Magnit, SIBA Bank, said Artem Div, leading analyst at A Markets. The companies the analyst mentioned are some of the largest enterprises in Russia in areas such as banking, retail and mining, and their well-being is important for the Russian economy and stock market. We can expect that the Russian stock market in the near future has a chance to continue to grow. The MOEX index can grow to 2,400 points and the RTS index to 1,120, said Ivan Marchina, an analyst at the Forex Club. Now, Matt, I really don't understand these indexes. Can you, sort of explain that a little bit more for the listeners? I mean, to me, it seems the ruble is doing well, but that's about all that I can get from this. And 67.7 against the dollar, that seems very good to me. It's basically saying the ruble is worth 67 cents. Is that right? And that it's worth 79 cents of the euro? I mean, that seems pretty good to me. It's worth two thirds of a dollar. A ruble is, and the ruble used to be worth nothing at all. So can you enlighten us a bit more about what this means and what these indexes are, Matt?
MOEX is just the Russian stock market, and what's happening here is the pattern seems to be, you'll see this with Turkey and elsewhere. When sanctions first hit, there was a dip. People were kind of panicking a little bit, both in the West and in the East, but it was very brief. The press went crazy. Oh, the Russian economy is in crisis. But in less than a month, it exploded. Completely went in the other direction. The point is, when investors realize that the Russian or Chinese businesses are not as exposed to the American boom bust cycle that it's had for centuries, it's more stable. The state is powerful. The state is popular. The state is seen as a fair dealer in economics, especially by foreign investors. The economy is stable, it can grow, and the currency, especially with dumping as many dollars as humanly possible, money could go elsewhere. I told you again, you know, Russia's raised money in the West through its Eurobond offering. It did very well. And they're risking all kinds of stuff. Western investors, they don't care. They're willing to buy it. The U.S. dollar is not trusted anymore. And so places like yuan or the lira or the ruble are doing extremely well. To the extent that Russian economy is not exposed to the instability and the debt, the Western economy, the better it's going to do and the better foreign investors are going to see. The stability of the economy or the currency has a lot to do with what investors think is going to happen, how much confidence they have. They have zero confidence in the U.S., but they have great confidence in Russia, especially when it's paired with China and India in this new market. So you have after a brief dip when the sanctions first hit, you have this massive growth. And the Russian stock market is, you know, is growing by leaps and bounds. The currency is doing very well. The economy is growing. And of course, the relations between Russia, China, and India, that triangle, and it includes Iran as well, in Kazakhstan, Vietnam, places like this, Russian agriculture is exploding. Manufacturing is exploding. Eurasia is the future. And they don't need dollars. And the U.S. can do absolutely nothing about it. So yeah, the ruble is going to do well and the Russian economy is going to do well.
So it doesn't. What it's basically showing is America can hit Russia as hard as it can with the sanctions, and yet within a matter of months, everything is going to be back stable again. So investors are going to be quite happy to invest in a country like that, whereas you have big boom and bust sequences like the great crash that happened in Britain 8 years ago, I think it was, and we're still paying for that now. And the same happened with all the mortgages over there in America. So that sort of thing isn't going to happen in Russia. So people want to invest them. And do you think they're going to ignore the sanctions then and invest in Russia anyway? Or do you think they're just going to leave it to China and India? Do you think there are going to be American investors that try to bypass the sanctions, Matt?
Well, I know there already are. I know Citibank and American Express, under different names, are investing in Russian credit institutions. They're not supposed to. Even Exxon has gotten into trouble. I think they owe about $8 million in fines, but they're going to fight it. There's going to be long, drawn-out court cases the U.S. doesn't want to have to deal with. We talked about the Germans already, ignoring the sanctions on every level. They're already deeply invested in Russia. They're not going to lose everything because the U.S. is angry. You're talking about some of the most powerful companies in the world now who do not trust the U.S. government, not even paying attention to the EU, and realize that Russia and China together are far more powerful and far more significant than countries that can't pay their bills. And this market is they're just getting started with this. And Russia, of course, is the origin of so much high tech stuff going into China. And the U.S. putting all these tariffs on almost everything coming out of China now, China just went elsewhere. They don't need the U.S. market anymore. The U.S. market is so heavily indebted anyway. The one weapon the U.S. had to use against the world is gone. These sanctions were a great thing. You know, Russians are even building their own internet because I know some of the big internet providers are going to be cutting Russia out. They're building their own thing, and everyone wants to be a part of it. Whatever they do, knowing full well it's going to be stable and long-term, and the state is not just this weapon of capital anymore. It's actually a public good. American investors will, you know, they'll say, you know, nice things about the sanctions, but they won't listen to it because they realize, as you said, if they ignore it, then others, the Chinese, Indians, whatever, will go in and make a huge profit that they could have been making. This is why even the EU is blocking American sanctions relative to Iran. Because there's so many European companies who are already making money there. You can't do this. And it's ham-handed, it's stupid, it's based on nothing, and they're paying for it, and they're paying for it dearly.
Well, what about banking sanctions? Because that's what I hear is going to be the next thing. They're saying they're going to be putting sanctions on the banks. Now, what does that actually mean when they put sanctions on the banks? Because this is Donald Trump's next step, isn't it? If Russia doesn't allow chemical weapons inspectors in, I mean, how ludicrous is that? If Russia doesn't allow chemical weapons inspectors in, even though they said a couple of years back Russia had no chemical weapons, Trump says he's going to put sanctions on the banks. So is that going to harm them at all? And what is it when they put sanctions on the banks? What does that involve?
You put sanctions on the bank. This means that Western corporations and banks that have dealings with them can't collect. Any investment they may have in the financial sector can't be collected on. This is midterm election rhetoric and nothing more. The EU has already said they're not going to enforce this. They're heavily invested in the financial sector. Banks are, you know, dealing with one another. You can't just shut that down. And that's really what it would entail. It's a really stupid thing to bring up to politicize this. And remember, Russia and China have nationalized banks. It's the state that they're dealing with. The profit motive is there. But in the West, you have heavily indebted banks who probably can't trust the governments to have the taxpayer bail them out over and over and over again. So, you know, you can't do this. You can't tell them that you can't collect on your debt. You can't collect on your bond or whatever it is. And now that the Europeans are buying Russian bonds like crazy because they trust the ruble, what are they going to do? All that has to go back? It's absolutely ludicrous at this point. And the same thing goes for China, anywhere else to try to do this. Russia isn't Venezuela. You know, it's a massive economy. Only 9% of the economy, by the way, is connected to oil or gas. Norway is more dependent on oil. The foreign earnings are another matter, but domestic economy, it's agricultural, it's machinery, it's scientific, it's everything. So it has nothing to do really with prices of oil, except for foreign exchange earnings. But, you know, it's simply impossible. It's rhetoric done for midterm elections in hopes that no one's going to ask what exactly sanctions on a bank would be. It's simply impossible. The EU has already said we're not going to enforce it.
Well, Moscow is actually doing so well that it's now reaching out to Turkey. Moscow is interested in trading with Ankara using the Russian ruble and the Turkish lira, according to the Kremlin. Both currencies have been falling against the greenback, with the lira setting new record lows every day. The issue of using national currencies in bilateral trade operations is a topic that has been raised by the Russian side for a long time now and consistently at various levels, including at the top level, said Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov. This is what we are striving for in our bilateral trade and economic relations, and what has been repeatedly mentioned in the bilateral Russian-Turkish talks, he added. The lira plummeted to a record low of 7.20 against the dollar. That's about 10% of what the ruble is to the dollar. The lira plummeted to a record low of 7.20 against the dollar before strengthening to 6.16 on Wednesday and mounting pressure from new US sanctions. Washington began to apply economic pressure on Ankara after the detention of American pastor Andrew Brunson in Turkey. Brunson is accused of aiding the failed military coup in 2016. He is facing 35 years in a Turkish prison. So what's this? What's bilateral trades that they would be doing with Ankara? Does that mean they'll be selling stuff to Ankara? Does that mean they'll be teaming up with Ankara to invest money on the stock exchange? What does this actually mean, this working together with Ankara, Matt?
Russia is building an alternative trading structure because of these. This is the Americans' worst nightmare. When I say America, I mean capital. I'm talking about corporations, banks, etc. It's their worst nightmare. Turkey, the prime minister came right out and said that we don't trust the American market. We don't trust the American government. We don't trust the dollar. We're shifting everything east. Now, we talked about the CIA agent, this pastor Brunson. We had a whole show partially about him. It's a stupid, you know, he's 100% CIA. It's just an excuse. And of course, we also talked about Turkey leaving NATO, getting all kinds of Russian military equipment, which will get them kicked out of NATO anyway. They're shifting their entire world. You know, just 10 years ago, there was a massive influx of capital from the EU, partially from the US. And the minute things got better elsewhere, they pulled out, leaving all these unfinished projects. And in currency, inflation went up. they realize that being part of the world economy is awful for a small country. It's not the case when you deal with Russia and China. These are long-term state-run projects rather than projects done by yuppies in New York City. They had this huge amount of money to play with 10 years ago, and then they pull out for various reasons. They want to invest it elsewhere. They think interest rates are going to go up, whatever it is, and they pull out, leaving the country absolutely broke. That kind of dependency is out of the question. After the Turks shot down that Russian fighter and Putin pretty much threatened to incinerate the place, the prime minister got extremely pro-Russian after that. And he began to realize that you simply can't trust the U.S. The U.S. Wanted that coup to overthrow him, and it was Putin who warned him about it. The CIA knew about it, didn't say a word. So that's what's happening here. And it's almost like an old it's a new trading bloc based on national currencies. It's really the Shanghai Cooperation Organization spreading out over more and more countries. It's a nightmare for the West. And any country who pegs its currency to the ruble or to the yuan has a stable state-run economy to stabilize itself, not the very unstable, indebted economy of the West. That's really what's going on here. And Russia's taking advantage of this position.
That was a very shrewd move of Putin to warn Erdogan about that coup against him. I mean, that was very clever of him to do that. Well, the US has also introduced new sanctions against Russia last week over the poisoning of double agent Sergei Skripal. Washington has refused to provide any proof to support allegations of Moscow's responsibility for the incident. The Russian ruble fell to its lowest level since 2016 against the dollar following the news. But why would they be even bothered about what it's doing against the dollar when all their trade is with these other countries? And the more that Washington attacks them in that way, the better it is for Russia, because it just seems to improve their economy, as we've just been discussing. Let's have a look at how Turkish President Erdogan, how he has responded to this boycott and this attacking of the lira. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has announced a boycott of American electronic products in response to Washington's economic pressure against Ankara after the detention of a US pastor in Turkey. There is an economic attack against Turkey. Earlier, such things were done in secret, and now they are open to us. We can react in two ways, economically and politically, Erdogan said in Ankara Tuesday. Our Ministry of Finance and the Treasury are working day and night. We will boycott electronic goods from the United States. They have iPhones, but on the other hand, there are Samsungs. We have our local brand, Venus Vestel. We will use it, the Turkish president added. Share prices in Turkish electronics manufacturer Vestel rose sharply on Erdogan's comments. See, this is going to encourage the Turks to start producing their own technology, basically. How is that going to benefit America to have Turkey producing all its own stuff? It's not going to benefit America. This is really just sort of cutting off your nose to spite your face, I think, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, that's a good metaphor. These are short-term rhetorical attacks. They're done by a country that doesn't realize it's not a superpower anymore, if it ever was. It's losing influence everywhere. It has no money. It's losing every war it's trying to be involved in. It's being outperformed economically everywhere. And its so-called allies are not only dumping dollars all over the place, but ignoring the sanctions that the U.S. has staked a total reputation on. Like I said last time, it's like a multi-billionaire who loses all his money and yet still walks around town like he's the most powerful guy there. It's a pathetic sight. He's not what he hasn't adjusted to being a poor man. It's the same thing here. And the next section we talk about here in a minute is really what this is all about. U.S. is not a superpower. It's failed miserably. And everything comes down to promoting neoliberal economic policies, social liberalism, and everything else that the world rejects and that have failed economically. This is about corporate capital being able to do what it pleases in any country. And when you have large countries that can't be bullied like China or India saying no, the U.S. can do very little about it. And these sanctions do nothing but increase in South Africa. Well, these sanctions, South Africa was making everything from toothbrushes to cars to mouthwash. You got 100% employment. You had blacks from all over Africa pouring into South Africa for these jobs and opportunities that they can get nowhere else. Sanctions, especially in a large – pretty much self-sufficient country like Russia anyway, is really a boon. And you need a powerful leader like Putin and a powerful state and a legitimate state, a trustworthy state, to guide the country through it. It really is a godsend.
Well, all these bizarre reasons for actually coming out with these sanctions, like in Turkey, because they locked up a pastor. Okay, we will sanction the whole economy for that. And over here in Russia, oh yeah, Russia was responsible for a chemical attack, even though there's no evidence to show that the Russian state was involved in this at all. The reasons for that are, you know, they're not public knowledge, but they are actually being admitted to, the real reasons elsewhere. An extraordinary new Pentagon study has concluded that the United States-backed international order established after World War II is fraying and may even be collapsing, leading the United States to lose its position of primacy in world affairs. The solution proposed to protect US power in this new post-primacy environment is, however, more of the same. More surveillance, more propaganda, or strategic manipulation of perceptions, as they call it, and more military expansionism. Top on the list of forces that have knocked the US off its position of global preeminence, says the report, are the role of competing powers, major rivals like Russia and China, as well as smaller players like Iran and North Korea. The document is particularly candid in setting out why the US sees these countries as threats. Not so much because of tangible military or security issues, but mainly because their pursuit of their own legitimate national interests is, in itself, seen as undermining American dominance. So their own nationalism is what is seen as a threat. Russia and China are described as revisionist forces, and we've heard that phrase before, who benefit from the United States-dominated international order, but who dare to seek a new distribution of power and authority commensurate with their emergence as legitimate rivals to US dominance. Russia and China, the analysts say, are engaged in a deliberate program to demonstrate the limits of US authority, US will, US reach, US influence, and US impact. The premise of this conclusion is that the United States-backed status quo international order is fundamentally favorable for the interests of the US and its allies. Any effort to make global order also work favorably for anyone else is automatically seen as a threat to US power and interests. So it's saying that other countries that wish to actually do what's best for that country, that's why they're a threat to the United States. And you know, this just shows to me there's a difference between the head of the United States and the power structure. I mean, Donald Trump wants to do what's best for America, make America great again. And obviously, he wants other countries to do that as well. And yet, all the other forces in America are saying, no, 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 you can't do that. You can't do that. We've got to crush everybody else, because if everybody else starts doing what's best for them, it's going to be worse for America. Do you see what I mean there, Matt? It's like two opposite sides, isn't it? Conflict there, right at the very top.
This document that the article is talking about comes from the U.S. Army War College. It's about 200 pages, and it deals with how the U.S. is going to deal with the fact that it's not a superpower anymore. So the Pentagon admits this already. It's not. It doesn't have the money, the men, the will, nothing. The second half of this thing deals mostly with propaganda. And it's very – they're assuming most people can't read this, which is probably true. I don't even know what it is. They coined two phrases, hostile facts and toxic facts. These are facts that are inconvenient for the political system. The fact that Russia is doing so well despite that it doesn't have a liberal system, that China is doing so well, all these countries are doing so well without a liberal system. They don't need the U.S. That, in fact, neoliberalism is awful for the economy, that private central banks are a disaster. These are all facts, but they're wrong only to the extent that it hurts the U.S. So because the U.S. doesn't have the army, the military forces anywhere to fight these people, and no political will to do it, they have to now focus on information. They have to focus on challenging toxic facts and imposing their own, which, of course, are false, but they support the U.S. interests. So the coining of the phrase toxic fact to refer to a truth that makes the U.S. look bad. This is what we have to look forward to here. Taking over media even more blatantly while claiming everyone else has state-run media, controlling information to an extreme degree, throwing people off the web, throwing people off YouTube, all this stuff. This is now official U.S. policy. Now, technically, this document from the U.S. Army War College, funded by the DOD, is not official policy, but that's a distinction without a difference. Of course it is. And they're talking about this very openly. What we do here is engage in toxic facts or toxic truth. For the U.S. to remain a powerful nation, maybe even a superpower, it has to be crushed. So somewhat what we see happening now, our guys going off to prison, everyone getting thrown off social media and everything else. This is now the official doctrine of the U.S. State Department, of the Defense Department, the NSA, and everything else. We're heading into times that are exciting because we're winning all over the place, but they're frightening as hell. We're going to see who the real nationalists are when the hammer comes down. I just wonder if this document is really saying we're not going to fight Russia militarily, or we're going to crush RT, and we're going to crush these idiots talking about Russia and China being a great thing. Because this is where war is going. This is how they adapt to a post-American world. That's really what this thing is all about, and that's why it's so frightening.
Oh, it's amazing, isn't it? You know, they talk about promoting democracy, which is, you know, everybody having a say, and then they're saying here that you know, if these countries are making use of, you know, the globalism and the democratic the democracy and the way that these countries can make use of the framework that's been put in place since World War II, if they're doing it for themselves and not doing it for America, then they're a threat and they have to be crushed. Which goes totally against, you know, all this promotion of democracy that they come out with, that everyone has a say and countries have a right to rule themselves. It's total hypocrisy. And yeah, I mean, it we are going to see America crashing, basically, and we're going to see more arrests of nationalists and more silencing of the truth, basically. I mean, toxic facts. That's a good word that you come up with there, Matt. Was that actually in the document? They were calling it toxic facts.
Oh, no, I didn't make it up. No, that was in the document.
That is their actual word.
Actually, they coined the phrase toxic fact, and the other one was hostile fact. They're slightly different things. They're true things, though. No, that was not me. That was right in the Army War College.
The truth itself is toxic and hostile to the regime. Well, that's all we really need to know about them, really, isn't it? They think the truth is toxic and hostile to them. So they're obviously not on the side of the truth. They're on the side of the master of lies. Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.